Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Appreciate you making your way here. I hope if you not already, that you'll hit that subscribe button. You'll get new interviews just like this one every single week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating, leave a review while you're hanging around. Of course, we've had some great guests on lately. Lucianne Buchanan, you know her from The Night Agent. She's also starring in Chief of War with Jason Momoa on Apple TV+. We talked with the four actors who play Happy Gilmore's sons in the new Happy Gilmore 2, including MJF, the wrestler, Ethan Kutkoski from Shameless, and Connor Sherry. And we also talked to Kyle Newacek. You know him from Workaholics. He directed Happy Gilmore 2, all five of them, just on the show. Michael Clifford from 5 Seconds of Summer, Caroline Polachek, Allison Goldfrapp of Goldfrapp, Ben Folds, the cast of Zombies 4 on Disney, Wet Leg, Renee Elise Goldsberry from Hamilton, and Girls 5 Eva. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, we're doing a rewind episode, looking back on my interviews with They Might Be Giants. Formed in 1982 by John Flansburgh and John Linnell, the duo turned accordion solos and science facts into an unlikely art form. They blended geek rock, absurdist humor, and pop hooks, and really wormed their way into both college radio and preschool classrooms. They made dial-a-song a thing before voicemail was even cool. They gave us the Tiny Toons boosted hit Istanbul, Not Constantinople, and helped an entire generation learn that the sun is a mass of incandescent gas until scientists corrected them and they recorded a new version. Along the way, they scored TV themes like Malcolm in the Middle. They've released somewhere like, 30 albums? And they turn lyrical nerdery into a lifestyle. You may not always understand what they're singing about, but you'll absolutely find yourself singing along. And every time I've got to talk with them has been one of my favorite conversations that I've ever had. And so we'll start back in 2013. This is when they had just released Nanobots. It was actually their 16th album at that time. I mean, I guess it's still their 16th album at this time, too. But we got to talk about how a band known for wit and whimsy continued to evolve without losing their signature weird. The duo discussed how writing short songs became their version of sonic collage, how self-loathing fuels reinvention, and what happens when you start to wonder if you've used up all of the nouns. All that and more in this special rewind episode. It's Kyle Meredith with They Might Be Giants.
Kyle Meredith here with the Johns of They Might Be Giants.
Kyle!
Welcome!
It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. We'll say that I hold Nanobots in my hand.
Fantastic. That's
album 16? Is that right?
Yes, it is officially 16? Album 16, yes. Yeah.
I thought you were about to say you hold it in high esteem or something.
I hold it in higher esteem now. That's, it's 16 albums, though.
Yep.
Does it just get Does every just get like, oh, okay, the album got released?
We made a list of other bands' 16th albums, and it stacks up reasonably well against almost every artist that has gotten to the point of making a 16th album, except possibly for the Rolling Stones, whose 16th album was Some Girls. So yeah.
Stung a little bit by the quality of Some Girls.
Yeah.
That's a really good album.
I don't know if this is our Some Girls.
Some Girls is better than our album.
Right.
Well, all in all, it has been really awesome to kind of see everything that you guys have done in your career.
Oh, thank you.
Because what you said, you know that it's a They Might Be Giants record. You know when you hear it, you know, it's like, oh, it's They Might Be Giants, mm-hmm. but you are always kind of trying to put different soundscapes and whatever else in your records, and that's also fun to keep up with.
Yeah.
But through the years, so you do have this building momentum in the 80s, and then, you know, the mainstream success, the 90s, it goes down a little bit, and then the last decade has been so great.
It has been good for us. Yeah. We've done a lot of different things. We've started doing kids' music, which was almost instantly as, like, big a deal as our adult career, so it was like, all of a sudden we had, like, twice as much stuff going on, and that was interesting. And, but, you know, just getting back to, like, the, you know, does it ever seem the same. I mean, I think the truth of it is you can take the self-loathing and turn it around. Like if you're working on music and you're like, and you're sick of yourself, that's fuel for writing new kinds of stuff and working in different ways. It's like you can be, you know, way down the rabbit hole of recording and still find a way to get something good out of the experience, I think. You know, and there's stuff on this new record that is actually kind of uncharted territory. I mean, I shouldn't be so cruel.
No, there's dark songs. I mean, you know, Call You Mom, I feel like, is one that we're going to be talking about for a while. But it's at first it turns creepy, but then you think, that character is just sad. That's mm-hmm. a sad character.
I don't know. Is it so? To me, it seems, I don't know. It doesn't seem
like,
so
what,
twisted.
Like, there is something in the title alone that leads to a great backstory, an unsaid backstory, you know?
I'd like to speak to the women watching this wherever this is going to show up. You know, the idea of men sort of being on a Peter Pan kind of trip, I don't think that's uncharted territory. I don't think that's an unfamiliar idea.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I think the song is kind of tapping into a kind of universal thing among contemporary men in the mm-hmm. culture. And, you know, while the men might not want to admit it, I think the women know what's going on.
Well, Peter Pan, you bring that up. They might
Peter
be
Pan,
giants.
Oedipus.
Yeah, think, well, yeah. well that, no,
Oedipus
that,
Pan.
That brings up a point. Oedipus Pan seems like it should be something entirely at this point. Can you use They Might Be Giants to never have
it's
to grow
It's just Call You Mom. It's just Call You Mom, right? It's not, it doesn't go any, it's, you know.
No. It's, do you need to retrace the song right
no,
now?
No,
Are
no,
you
no.
trying to think, like, what did
no,
I
I'm
say?
Just, no, no.
No, do you guys get to use this band
he wrote that great song.
Song yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys get to use this band, though, as an excuse to never, ever have to grow up if you don't want to? Because you've got a great reputation.
Oh, able to use that.
Oh,
well, that's hardball, man.
No.
We're not going that deep.
The truth is that, we are... You know, one of the things that's tough about being, like, professionally happy is that people really look at, you know, if you're having, a hard day... You know, people are just wondering, it's like, how come Krusty's in such a, you know, mood? You know, it's just like, we're adults. We got adult problems.
Sure.
You know, like, we can, there are big challenges in our lives that are, you know, hard to.
But you have a license. Like, you can get away if you wanted to. We're not going to question either one of you. It's like, they get to. They might be
doing. Well, I think you're right that we officially get to do stuff that we don't even give ourselves permission to do.
Yeah.
You know. We don't, and which is at our age now is actually completely uninteresting to us.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not just about the cliched mm-hmm. rock lifestyle, but that's certainly something that.
Which is awesome.
Just John and I essentially passed on, you know, like we.
That's the.
We were in our 20s in a rock band and we didn't take advantage of it then. And so now it's, you know, sort of like, well, should I start now? You know. Should I vomit on myself now? Would that be a smart thing to do?
But I guess you know, there is this interesting idea because we have, like, humor in what we're doing that people assume that we're not just a total drag. And I'm here to say we are
a total drag.
We are a total drag.
That's the one license we do afford ourselves.
It's the life of the jester, right?
Yes,
always the sad clown with
no one understands.
No, that actually brought up a quote, and I can't remember at this point if it was John Entwistle or John Bonham that was saying that they didn't get famous to a certain age, and at that point, what's fame?
Oh, John Entwistle definitely expressed that feeling. Like he said, I'm too old to enjoy
this
now, you know.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then he died.
Right.
Well,
this interview took a dark turn.
But he was very famous really young. I mean, I think those guys, you know, we didn't start really making albums until our late 20s and didn't get any kind of anything that would kind of turn your head around kind of success until we were probably like 29 or 30. So I feel like we actually lucked out in the, like, mind-bending part of success. Like
we didn't have the child star issue.
Yeah,
no Charlie Sheen moments for you guys.
I think it would be very hard to be 20 and be in a successful rock band. I don't know how well prepared anybody could be for
that. That's what most people do, it though. I mean, if you make it, it's a you thing.
And I think it would like kind of twist you around. I mean, it was very easy for us to be, you know, if we were like doing something like, I mean, when Birdhouse took off in the UK, like we were kind of shot out of the same cannon that every pop act gets shot out of, and you know, we're on top of the pops, and things are, you know, all that kind of frothy, crazy, teeny boppery stuff was happening, and it just seemed like, you know, we were 30 years old. It was like, you know, okay, sure,
right.
You know, like we could relate to the, you know,
I can pay off my my student
that's
loan.
What it's about, right?
Right, right. You know, I mean, it made communication with, right. Well, that's I did that. But
first car, big house. No credit card bills. Yes. Yeah. Debt free.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I think we kind of lucked out in that way because it just made all the whole roller coaster of it all just seems like one ride rather than like everything's great. No, it's bad.
Sure.
You know, it's just
sure,
like you kind of take the good with the bad.
You can take it.
And we'll be right back right after this.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with They Might Be Giants.
Well, let's talk about this CD actually specifically a little
bit.
Sure. So Nanobots, and it's number 16, if is going on. You guys have reprised the whole thing about short songs scattered throughout.
Right. Well, I think it's slightly different because we haven't done the short songs scattered throughout thing before. So that's new for us. Right.
I mean, speaking of John Entwistle, I was, you know, while we were putting the record together, I listened to the album, The Who Sell Out, which is a great record. On
jingles
its,
throughout.
Yeah. It's got jingles throughout, and it also has like some kind of montage-y song at the end. It's a really wide open way of putting together an album, and it was, you know, definitely. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, in the history of rock, there's like a lot of interesting montage-y albums, but I think it's worthwhile. It's, you know, I don't think we'd do it every time, but it certainly helped this people kind of take notice of this album, which is interesting.
But that's definitely separated, of course, from Join Us as well. When I hear these, I just get the image that you guys, you know, what's the random word that I just heard right now? Like somebody can walk down the sidewalk and be like, oh, there's a candy wrapper. Hey, candy wrapper in my pocket. And
well,
that
I'm sure that would
be giants.
Yeah. I'm sure that would be a good parody of
life would be easier for us
candy wrapper.
If that was how we worked.
What
I think,
you doing on the ground?
Yeah. So is there so much work though that can get that? I mean, do you work on? You can't work on those songs as long as you
think.
Work on the
I think
other
we really, though. We really don't want to give the impression that it's you don't spend any time on.
What's the smart answer to something like that? Well, you know, like
I'm not
like,
trying to paint you into a corner here.
No, I understand. Right. Yeah. We'll wait till the paint to dry.
Right, and then you can walk out on your own.
Right. No, I mean, there's one of the really short tracks on the song on the album is a song called Nouns that is about running out of nouns, which I think is something that we've. It's crossed our mind that we've written songs with almost every.
Sure.
You know, there's.
You can't put man like, after too many more things at this
right.
point.
Yeah,
it's
right.
a sort of reductive way of thinking about songwriting.
We got the dog ones, we got the bird one, we got.
But you realize, like, in some ways, that's an outsider's view of what we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a joke because, in fact, the song is not about the noun. It's really something else.
Sure,
and
sure.
it's and ideally, it's this irreducible, you know, landscape. And I think that's what we're always hoping for, you know, is to make something that doesn't, you can't tell where it starts. I think the best songs that we do My sense is that they give you the impression that it couldn't, it was impossible to write. There's no way to write that song because there's nowhere to start.
The other, I guess, the hook to it that you guys have you know, been known for the whole time is that type of educational song that you did. And that's, that has been talked about, you know, for every record, and it's great, and it's one of the great qualities. So what I guess I'm wondering, though, is when you write those, is it that you're saying it would be really good to make sure people know who James K. Polk is, or what is, or is it really just geek masturbation?
No, it's neither one of those things.
It's neither.
You have a choice, John. Geek masturbation or doing something for the public good.
Yeah.
Make your choice.
The interesting thing about Polk is that the idea of that song was this sort of trippy thing of doing a song that didn't appear to have any personality. Like it was like the textbook is singing.
It was like a cipher.
Yeah. And there wasn't any plan to do any more like that. And in fact, I don't think any of the other songs that are sort of biographical are in that mode, because the other ones, like Ensor, there's an opinion behind it. So I really don't think I don't think any of them are alike. We've been sort of identified as a band that does what sounds like informational songs. And really, if you look at them, each one is different. And some of them, I mean, the weird thing about Polk is I actually have stuff to say about James K. Polk, like highly opinionated stuff that just doesn't get into the song whatsoever. You know, like he's a controversial.
What state are we in?
But it does actually bring up another interesting point to you guys' career, because you can take They Might Be Giants song at face value. Mm-hmm. Are there underlying messages? You have lots of opinions about James K. Polk. Do you guys ever say, I feel like this about anything?
I would say that in general, our stuff is available up front. In other words, we don't do secret messages. You know, that's not. I don't. In some ways, I don't feel personally like that's cool. Like I kind of like this song to tell you what it's telling you, and there not to be any code in it.
It'd be a very strange impulse, actually, to.
Have an agenda.
We're already writing like songs that are kind of hard to
exactly
a little bit oblique sometimes, you know. I mean, a lot of times there's like very compressed thought in some songs
that
it's, you know, you're just trying to figure out how to get this idea across.
But if it's elliptical, then that's what you get. In other words, that there's nothing, there's no missing part. It's like that's what the song is.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's almost like if there are missing parts within a song, like if it is sort of impossible to wrap your head around, the whole idea is to give you that, to generate whatever that impression is, like leave you, you know, if, you know, it's interesting. I mean, somebody said to me a while ago, like, you know, people don't know they want to be surprised. And it is like this thing about a mysterious song that, you know, there's no, when in the book of like how to write a hit song, there's no part that says like, do something that's really unknowable and mysterious and it will capture people's imaginations and kind of spark their minds up a little bit. And but that's obviously what a lot of people want out of music. They don't want to just have like their prosaic world kind of echoed back at them. They actually like the imaginative stuff.
The puzzle, the unraveling.
Yeah, that's the puzzle. Yeah.
I think some people do probably want this thing that we don't give them, which is, you know,
well, people hate us.
An explanation. Right. Some people demand an explanation. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think country. I mean, contemporary country music is actually like, you know, a good example of like, you know, you couldn't be more earthbound in a way. But I find, you know, I feel like my head's in a vice.
Talk about repetitive. You use the word good and contemporary country in the same sentence, not together.
Well, you know,
same sentence.
I don't know.
We're not here to knock country music.
No.
Yeah.
We can.
If
but
you
we're not
don't
here
like
to knock
country music.
No, I guess what it brought it back to was that I'd heard a critic say that like Black Ops, a political song, and I listen to Black Ops and I go, well. Black Ops is a really weird song.
I wouldn't even know how to back up far enough to explain or defend it. I mean, it's kind of about, you know, it is a political song in its ultimate way. It's about morality in a way, but it's also just such a weird experiment in
creepiness.
Who the narrator
seems to be running throughout this thing.
Right. Who the narrator is in that song is a really, you know, I mean, he's a very cavalier guy, like, and it's strange to sort of celebrate him that voice, you know. I mean, somebody's probably really mad already.
Well, it's fun celebrating the creepiness of Nanobots, album number 16.
Another adult album from They Might Be Giants.
You gotta
hide it
those.
From your children.
Yes. No, this is great. Thank you guys so much for stopping by for the conversation.
Oh, thanks for having us.
For continuing and not giving up.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with a special Rewind episode with They Might Be Giants. Now we're going to go up to 2017. That's when John Flansburgh dropped by to talk about their record, I Like Fun. It became the band's 20th album. And yes, he was surprised by that number, as anyone. Flans reflected on the album's unexpectedly perfect timing, hitting during what he called a dystopian hellscape, and explained how the band's dark humor and cheer up loser ethos accidentally became a comfort in chaotic times. We also got to talk about mortality, this songwriting as a puzzle craft, how Mellotron samples from Cream's Jack Bruce shaped the title track, and the enduring challenge of writing songs that surprise people without becoming disposable. Let's get into it. Part two of this special Rewind episode, it's Kyle Meredith with John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants.
I love the junk stores of Louisville. I hope I have a chance to check it out.
I don't think I have comparisons of the junk stores of Louisville compared to other cities. Do we have anything exceptional here?
You have wealthy people who seem to throw things away carelessly. Like Aspen, like the way Seattle used to be. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's like if there's a certain kind of generational thing where there's like a certain, you know, bunch of people actually have money and then they just like sort of toss their estates away, it really makes the junk stores super nice.
Well, again, the big congratulations, as they say, for the new record, I Like Fun. It's a big round number. This is your 20th. Does that mean anything extra special?
We kind of just do what we do, and it's strange how it kind of, we're on a very sort of gentle roller coaster ride where things kind of go up and things go down, and it's hard to understand why things happen or when things are going to happen. I mean, what's interesting right now is, like, I feel like we've actually put out a fairly consistent bunch of albums in the past few years, but this one is getting a tremendous amount of notice. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I'm kind of coming to the realization that sometimes it has more to do with the world that the album is entering than the album itself. Like, I think a lot of people are really ready for a They Might Be Giants album. You know, they're kind of happy and relieved that we're making an album. Because just because the world is such a chaotic, kind of dystopian hellscape, and there's something kind of reassuring about They Might Be Giants record entering the world.
Right.
You know, it's just like, and especially that it's for adults and that it's not, you know, we're kind of mining a very strange kind of cheer up loser thing with our with our music, and it just makes sense to a lot of people, it seems like.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that too, because I'm in that camp. I'm relieved that there is, and I'm always excited to see a new record from you guys. And as we're happy, then you get into the lyrics, and you know, again, there's a lot of doom in this, as it does reflect what's going on out there. And you've sort of always had a history of singing about the doom. And I sort of wonder, as you look back on those songs, is this the doom that you were talking about?
I think the doom is just sort of the adult, you know, post adolescent existential dread that, you know, you it's not about sort of like the I can't go on in this world. It's much more about just like, oh my God, I have, you know, I can't quit this job. You know, I'm stuck here. It's hard to sum up. I mean, all the songs are different. There's different narrators, there's different voices in the songs, but so I don't want to like just say it's all one big heap. But this was last year was a hell of a year, and this one is going to be, looks like it's going to be even stranger. So
I mean, you know, the last time that you and I talked, it's when you were in Louisville on the last run. And I believe we were talking about, you know, the black helicopters, which seems so innocent right now.
That's true. I mean, yeah, it's a different, it's strange. I mean, things do definitely go in cycles, and a lot of things seem. I mean, I don't know. When I think about George, I feel like, did we just give George Bush a really hard time?
No, you know? He was a bad president. He really was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, send all your angry letters directly to the radio station.
Right here.
Not that they might be trying.
No,
yeah.
But, you know, it's worth saying, though, what I do appreciate about the way both of you write is that when you are politically minded in the songs, you always seem to find this sense of absurdity to go along with it. Whereas I feel like, you know, me and I think most people, a lot of people at least, you know, we sort of get stuck in the weeds of it all and can only see what's right in front of us. But you seem to always find the absurdity in it. Like, just wait.
Yeah, well, I think you know, we're kind of preoccupied with history, and I think as writers, we're also a little bit preoccupied with trying to figure out how to what we're doing have a shelf life. I mean, if you're just a pundit, if you're just talking kind of contemporaneously, improvisationally about the way things are in the world, you can definitely make a lot of hay out of, like, the, you know, what's happening right now. When you're writing, making a record album, all that sort of theatrical stuff, it's not going to hold up, you know, to repeated listening, and it's certainly not going to hold up to time. I mean, I remember, even just when we were making our first couple of albums, there was stuff we did in our show that was very theatrical, and it was very effective, like in a linear way, like we would do these sort of surprise kind of stunty things on stage, and people in the audience would definitely get swept up in it. But that's exactly the kind of stuff when you're actually doing the recording, you're suddenly like, well, what are we going to put in this part of the song where, you know, we have audience participation, you know, or whatever the thing is, like the stunt part of the song needs to be reinfused with some musical interest because it's not gonna last.
Well, it's one thing that I enjoy really about the the tongue-in-cheek version of the how you start out the record at all with "Let's get this over with."
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean it's sort of how I felt about the last couple of years anyway. It's like, well, we're in it, let's get it over with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it was funny. Like, when you have a song with a title like that in it, it's hard to ignore. I mean, it wasn't designed to be the first song. I guess we were actually like listening to it with, like, you know, the management folks we work with, and just sort of talking about the songs we had, and they were like, maybe that should be the opener. I was like, oh, huh. You know, I was sort of thinking it should be the closer, but then it seems like you're saying, like, you know, let's break up the band
and that's, we're done. And then, yeah.
Yeah, we don't need to send that into the world.
Oh, it's a great way to stir up press, is what it's really good at. You know, 20 albums and it's done.
Right. I don't know. It's everything's shocking to me now. I can't believe we've done. You know, when people say it, it doesn't sound real.
Well, you know, that's an interesting lead into another favorite theme of yours, which is the passing of time, and you've even said recently it's one of your favorite evergreen topics that the band has in your pocket. But, you know, 20 albums in, as you get older, does the shape of that theme change for you?
Well, I think the truth is, as writers, we lean on themes of death and despair in sort of at every level. I mean, it's like I think there's some things that are very sincere and real and clear-eyed about it. There's some stuff that's kind of fantastical and just for, you know, really almost entertainment purposes. And then at its very worst, it's a crutch. You know, it's just like we've got a third verse. We've run out of gas. We've run out of ideas. It's like, all right, let's just blow everything up. So it's like, it's not just an evergreen theme. It's actually it's like an all purpose. It's like the you know, craftsman tool that does like 9 different things.
Are you able to look back, or do you ever even look back on the older songs when you've tackled those themes and thought, oh, how naive I was? Or on the reverse line, like, wow, here I am at that whatever age I might have been talking about and nailed it.
I mean, in some ways, I'm surprised that, you know, as younger men, we were so, I mean, I felt like we could actually be kind of, sometimes we could be sort of more thoughtful than I would expect from us. I mean, considering what sort of, how like sassy and sarcastic we were most of the time, I don't know, you know, in our decrepitude, a lot of things come a little more naturally.
I really love that word, decrepitude. I don't hear that one enough.
Well, I'm using it all the time now.
I like to imagine, you know, when you guys write, when you have a chance to write, because I don't know when you guys ever stop doing anything, but I imagine it's like a writer's room for a skit show or a sitcom, just because of what comes out of it. Is that close to the truth at all?
Well, I mean, I wish we did more things that were just like head on collaborations, like in that kind of, you know, hothouse kind of way, because it can be very productive. I mean, we've definitely worked that way on projects. I'll especially things that were more like that had deadlines, like when we're doing stuff for TV and stuff like that. But when most of the writing we do, even the collaborative stuff that we do kind of sort of long distance, and that does give us a little bit of space and a little bit of sort of, in some ways, we're kind of, I think John and I are sort of shy of one another in terms of like the process, and it's not just out of like respect, it's also out of like respect for the fragility of a good idea. You know, I think sometimes when you're doing stuff, the good part is actually very small and specific, and it's, and you don't want to like break that off or like diminish it in any way. One of the nice things about doing music now in like the 21st century with digital audio and stuff like that is we can actually preserve some of the weirdest recordings that we make on the demos and bring them right into the albums that we're making, because for a very long time we were the kings. People might not be familiar with this expression, demo-itis, but it's the idea that you make a quick recording of your song with just a spare instrumentation and a vocal performance, and there's something very magical about those simple recordings. And we were, and people are always talking about how much they preferred the demo to the finished recording. And we were the kings of that. I mean, there were so many scenarios where we just be like, oh my God, the demo is so much better. Like we really lost it. Just somehow it just seemed like it got hit by a snowplow when we recorded the final version. And what's nice about now is we can kind of export, if there's anything of merit in the demo, we can sort of port it right into the finished recording. I mean, in fact, the whole recording process has become this kind of smeared demo to final. It's hard to even know where it stops and starts. But John and I we do this thing, you know, very much in that sort of a postal service kind of style of just sending files back and forth. And with this album, which is really a kind of a different, more unusual than our usual way of working, I actually put together a whole bunch of beats for John to write, you know, bass lines to or write chord progressions to, and putting together beats in and of themselves, like in that sort of abstract hip-hop way. It's such a strange way of working because you're kind of, you want it to be exciting. It has to be exciting. Like just, nobody's going to be inspired writing to a beat that isn't inspiring, but stopping at the moment that the beat is inspiring and just letting it go. Like the beat to Let's Get This Over With is like, you know, I gave John, and it was just sort of this weird gospel-y sounding thing with very specific hand clap sounds and kick drum patterns. And it was just, it was an odd, I thought it was a very cool sound. I was thinking like, I could write a song to this. And I sort of didn't particularly want to hand it off, but I knew he would, you know, cook up something fantastic with it. So I gave it, I put it in the stack of things for John.
And it worked out well. I mean, the whole record works out well.
I'm very happy with it. I mean, part of it also is we just recorded a crazy number of songs for the album. And I think we pulled the 15 from like 30 tracks. So there was a very strict kind of editing process, self-editing process.
With songs, you know, a lot of them I know for a writer, you're just trying to grab hold of that inspirational thought or whatever. But I'd be curious, and I apologize for what might come across as lazy journalism here, but...
Oh, that's okay.
Are there any... It's never okay, sir. Are there any are there any of the songs that have a particularly great backstory, just the beyond, oh, that's a cool idea? You know, does any of the songs really come from an interesting spot?
Well, I can tell you, I purchased a Mellotron, they make this reproduction Mellotron keyboard, and it's quite an expensive instrument. It's a very unusual instrument. People might be familiar with it from, you know, Strawberry Fields Forever or Fool on the Hill. There's a bunch of very famous Beatles songs that have very prominent Mellotron parts in them. It's a keyboard sound, but it's basically almost like a prototype of like a sampler, and it has a very blunt ending. When you lift your hand up from the keys, it kind of stops everything suddenly. But you can sample anything into it. It was popular in the 60s. It was really part of the psychedelic music scene. And they just started reproducing them. And I actually, you know, had one sent to John, and he was just like, this is too much for me. Like, I can't, you know, I want to keep my studio super minimal. And so it just kind of came back to me with this, and it has all these enormous sound libraries in it from very far-flung places, including a sound that's featured on the song I Like Fun, at the top of the song, there's like a vocal sound, like kind of sounds a little bit like a Laurie Anderson kind of thing. It's a voice going like, ah, in this very disembodied way. And that vocal sound was actually created by Jack Bruce, the bass player of Cream.
Oh, wow.
For his personal Mellotron sound library. And what he did is he just set himself up with a glockenspiel and a microphone and just went through the scales and on the keyboard and self-recorded himself singing every note. And then you can make like a little choir of Jack Bruce's singing. And the reason I know he had a glockenspiel as a pitch reference is because on some of them you can actually still hear, have headphones on, you can still hear the glockenspiel ringing out. Like that was his pitch guide. And I just thought it was so neat and odd. I mean, I've always been a huge Jack Bruce fan. I really like his voice. I like his sensibility. And there's something about those Cream records that are really exciting. And the idea that, you know, we could kind of reanimate the spirit of Jack Bruce in a song just seems very, very cool. And that really was like the jumping off point for that song was that very odd sound.
Again, nobody ever really dies. It's like
a
hologram version, just without the hologram. you've reanimated him.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, he has a very distinctive voice. It's like, you know, it's got this very kind of haunted, slightly hollowed out voice. And, you know, it really just works in the song perfectly.
That's cool. I do love that song. And it is as interesting as it is bizarre that only the Might Be Giants probably could have pulled that off.
So. With a little help from Jack Bruce.
From Jack Bruce. It was really fun talking to you. We're excited. Like I said, March 18th at Mercury Ballroom. We'll be seeing you here again.
Oh God! Well, thanks for plugging the show, and it's always a blast getting to Louisville. We don't come around as often as I'd like to. You know, I feel like it's like every third tour we actually get there. And there are a lot of other places that I'm so totally sick of.
Well, if you end up having the extra
won't mention
time,
them by name.
Yeah, you want to go junk hunting? Then count me in. You can show me the space. All right, man. See you around.
Thanks again.
And my thanks. John Flansburgh, John Linnell, They Might Be Giants. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. You can grab me at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Duran Duran, Nirvana, Oasis, Say She, Heather Nova, Jill Sobule, Splendor, Elliot Smith, Nico Case, Death Cab for Cutie, Dropkick Murphys, Samara Joy, Jonathan Brook, Sheryl Crow, and my interview with Juliana Hatfield. That's what you can catch weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.